This case is number 065096, Chapman Walker against Greenleaf Construction, against the United States and Michelson, Connor, and Moe. Mr. Del Sordo.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May I please the court? This case arises out of a federal procurement relating to sale and marketing and management of federal houses that have been foreclosed by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. What we have here is two instances of discretion of officials being trod upon. In the first instance, the contracting officer, arising out of the procurement and a protest that my client filed with the Court of Federal Claims, decided to take corrective action. Judge Wheeler, down below, did not like the corrective action that the contracting officer wanted to take, and he inserted himself in and said, no, you cannot take that corrective action now.
You want to exclude Greenleaf from rebidding, is that right?
That was the intent, Your Honor, because at the point that
that's why you're here.
Yes.
And on the basis that they're not as small business.
Correct, Your Honor, that they've determined to be other than small, and this
and
is
the
small
SBA business. Determined that they're small business.
After the contract is awarded, Your Honor. So we have a regulatory environment here where it says that if the SBA makes a determination that a company is small, but it comes after contract.
The award has been, vacated?
It had not been, Your Honor. The contract was awarded.
What about now?
Currently, it is still in place. It has not been terminated. It has not been vacated. The contract is stayed. My client's performance is stayed because there is then a further protest. After the contracting officer announced, I'm going to take corrective action, Judge Wheeler tweaked it and said, no, you need to include Greenleaf. The contracting officer opened up discussions for both entities. They had further discussions and there was a further evaluation, and the contracting officer announced on December 19th, I believe, that yes, the contract that was awarded to Chapman Law Firm was properly awarded, and we're going to go continue performance, essentially lifting the self-imposed stay that had been imposed in the announcement of the corrective action. That was then protested on December 29th by Greenleaf, and we're awaiting the GAO's decision on whether the contracting officer properly reaffirmed or restated her award, but the contract had never been terminated. It is still the same contract.
HUD has revised its corrective action to include Greenleaf, right?
It did, yes, and they included them in the evaluation process.
And you want to reverse that?
What we want to do is reverse Judge Wheeler's determination that the contracting officer cannot take a reasonable corrective action, in essence substituting his judgment for the contracting officers.
Well, that's essentially the government's argument, too.
Well, we agree with it.
But their other argument is that you waived your right to appeal.
And Your Honor, I don't know what they're talking about. The day after Judge Wheeler announced his decision, we filed the notice of appeal. There was a conference call with Judge Wheeler, saying, okay, do we have any other issues here? And the particular question was, can we, do we need any further redactions to the decision I'm going to issue? And that was the statement, no, we don't have any further issues. My only issue remaining was that the judge should issue an actual decision as opposed to granting their motion to dismiss. It's very clear from the conference call that I said, no, Judge, we think you need to issue an actual decision. So I don't think there was any waiver of our rights to appeal. We agree with the government in the one instance that the contracting officer should have been permitted to take corrective action without Judge Wheeler stepping in and saying, no, you're wrong, you have to go back and try again. Because the standard for the contracting officer taking corrective action is that if it's a reasonable corrective action that does not violate the law, then they should not be prevented from doing that. So her original corrective action was, okay, I'm not going to cancel the solicitation. I'm not going to issue a new procurement. And I'm going to go back and hold discussions with Chapman Law Firm. Because if we go back to where this came from, the contract was originally awarded to my client up to September 30th, 2005. That's protested by Greenleaf. The JAO issues a decision on January 17th, 2006, and says, contracting officer, you need to go back and look at Chapman's proposal to determine if they can perform after two people who said they were going to participate have decided not to participate in the procurement, and that they're changing their internal electronic database. And also, you need to go back and make sure that they have the financial wherewithal to perform after the sale of a certain asset by my client.
Well, let me move forward to another issue.
Okay.
One of those facts are in the record. The final order by the court of claims judge, in this case, the one that dealt with the attorney's fees issue,
right,
and so forth, it seems to have dealt with your getting receiving the ability to receive attorney's fees as well as Green. But you're not here arguing with the government about that. I mean, you want this order to go away, right? Because your position is this order should never have been issued because the first motion to dismiss by the government should have been granted, right?
Ultimately, I want you to overturn Judge Wheeler's decision. Okay.
His decisions that said that the government couldn't go forward with corrective action for just Chapman that didn't include you.
Correct, Your Honor. However, we also take the position that if you're going to allow that to go forward, then there's no reason to say that if the contracting officer says I'm going to take corrective action, that Judge Wheeler has to immediately drop the ball. Unlike at the GAO, where the
I don't understand what you just said. So are you arguing? Because I didn't see any argument in either of your briefs that dealt with this issue, the issue of the each of these, or the propriety of the judge having issued this order as opposed to seizing the case. Did you argue it was...
Yeah, we argued that we didn't waive our right to appeal. That's what I thought the government was getting at, and we presented argument that we did not waive our right to appeal. The bottom line is that the judge should have discretion to issue whatever decision he thinks is appropriate.
Wait, I don't understand that.
Okay.
Am I misunderstanding the argument? I thought the issue on waiver dealt exclusively with your ability to challenge what the district court did with respect to the initial corrective action. Now you're saying that the waiver also would apply to your ability to come in and argue about this final order?
That's one of the things I don't understand where the government was going at when they said that we had waived.
We'll have an opportunity to ask them.
My point is that if they were alleging, which is what I understood their brief to say, that we had waived our right to argue about anything on appeal, we said, no, this is only that we specifically said in the final conference call, no, Judge, we want you to issue a decision so that we have some finality here, that this just doesn't go away by the government saying, I'm going to take corrective action. And the case is moved, so we have to walk away.
But you filed two briefs here, and you raised certain issues on your appeal with the appellant.
Right.
I didn't see, so tell me where I'm missing it, if you raised any issue other than challenging what the district court did in the first instance, not responding to the government's argument.
In our reply brief, I responded to their argument, I think it's the first argument section, saying that we had waived our arguments based on some statements in the conference call. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I understood that their argument was to be, is that we had waived our rights, and I'm saying that that they're misconstruing what was said at the conference call.
But even after you argue about waiver, even if the waiver issue dealt with this, you still have to make the substantive argument,
okay,
right? And did you make the substantive argument?
Your Honor, I did not address the specific issue of whether the court should issue a decision to dismiss or entry of a judgment. I did not discuss that point. Okay, but I agree with Greenleaf's point that the government cannot just, by fiat, say we're going to take corrective action and that resolves the case. which is what Greenleaf is arguing. Once again, getting back to the judge's imposition or injection of himself into the corrective action process, the court needed to allow the contracting officer to proceed as she stated, unless there was some violation of law, and there had been none of that. And I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Joseph. Mr. Uriwaka, you're next.
May it please the court. The court may not even address any of Chapman's arguments on appeal, because the court erred in failing to dismiss this protest as soon as the agency had taken the initial corrective action that it had.
Can I just start with, I'm just confused by the government's position on various issues in this case.
I'm sorry.
One isn't the government is arguing, challenging the court's initial ruling on initial corrective action. That seems to me to be at least the bulk, if not the entirety, of Chapman's argument. So why is the government working so hard to say Chapman shouldn't be here, making the same argument that we're making?
Well,
just strategically, I'm confused about what's going on here with respect to the waiver argument.
I think some of the difficulty is that there were almost three announcements of a corrective action below. The first thing that happened was that the contracting officer said that it would that the agency would place the parties in the same positions they occupied prior to the breach and continue the reevaluation, but reassess how that would go forward. The trial court then stated that it would refuse to dismiss unless the agency elaborated on how that reevaluation would go forward. That's what we're objecting to. We're objecting to the notion that the trial court could retain jurisdiction after the parties have been placed in the same positions they occupied prior to the events that gave rise to the protest.
And isn't that what Chapman's arguing as well?
What Chapman is arguing with is with how the court responded to our response to the court's request as to how to go forward. And I'm sorry it's confusing, Your Honor, but this is what happened.
Well, this case, this issue has been going around for 3 years. It's just astounding.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but to further explain what happened next, when the court requested that the contracting officer elaborate how the reassessment would go forward, the contracting officer engaged in that reassessment as to how the reevaluation would continue and stated that that Chapman would be the party with whom discussions would be open with. Then the trial court used all of that information, both the initial announcement of the corrective action and the elaboration upon the corrective action, to make its determination as to whether to dismiss on the basis of the corrective action. So the trial court then denied the motion to dismiss and stated that the reason that the motion to dismiss should not be granted is because discussion should go forward not just with Chapman, but also with Greenleaf.
Right.
Then the agency took the final corrective action. The agency said, fine, we will include Greenleaf as well as Chapman and go forward. Please dismiss the case now.
And was that what we call the modified corrective action?
I think that's what we call the renewed corrective action. The modified corrective action, I believe, we referred to as what we did when we stated that Chapman would be the only party that would be included in discussion. So
well,
first,
can I just, in your brief, the red brief at page 28, you say no party objected to the substance of the modified corrective action. So I'm wondering what corrective action you're talking about there, that no party objected to.
I'm sorry, Ron, could you...
you obviously don't have lines. It's in the middle of the paragraph.
Yes.
Middle of the first full paragraph. As explained above, no party objected to the substance of the modified corrective action.
Yes, I think that's referring to the final corrective action, so I apologize if I just confused the court.
What final corrective action?
That was the action that included both Chapman and Greenwood in the discussions.
And no party objected. So why haven't you waived your right to challenge the first corrective action if you say here no party, which I assume includes the government, party, objected to the modified corrective action? So when you're arguing waiver with respect to Chapman, I don't understand why if you didn't object to what the court was saying about including Greenleaf, then how you can come up here now and challenge something that you say you voluntarily gave up.
What we're challenging, Your Honor, is the entry of judgment. And we contend that there are two reasons that the judge...
Which entry of judgment? At the last day, the last stage?
At the final stage, the court entered judgment. And what we believe is that the court prolonged its jurisdiction improperly with respect to that issue. That is, the court should not have requested...
But if you prevail on just that narrow question, on the final entry of judgment, which I understand, I think, affects each award.
Correct.
But if you prevail and you say, alternatively, they should have granted your motion to dismiss because this was moot. The status quo, then, includes it doesn't go back to the initial corrective action the government wanted, which was just check. Right?
Not exactly, Your Honor, because we believe that the initial corrective action was not, again, this is, I'm talking about the initial corrective action that didn't even discuss whether Chapman or Greenleaf or anybody would be included in discussions. So what we're contending, essentially, is that there shouldn't have been an entry of judgment because the jurisdiction of the court ended at that point. And
the entire government, all of this elaborate litigation is about whether or not there may be an entitlement to attorney's fees. Isn't that right?
That's right.
What assures if there were a dismissal as opposed to a judgment that the attorney's fees entitlement would be any different?
Under this court's Rice case and the Brickwood case.
But they were on different facts?
They were on different facts, Your Honor, but those cases adopt...
They were quite different facts. Here where, in fact, the agency did withdraw, did concede error, a whole bunch of things that were not in the other cases.
Well, I don't think that the agency conceded error. The agency...
Well, at least they took corrective action, whether or not they are willing to say we made a mistake and that's why we took corrective action, or else we're taking corrective action because we're so nice.
Well, the agency stated that it took corrective action because it was believed to be in the best interest of the government. There was
well,
no admission.
This is the government's sole interest, isn't it, on the form of the final resolution so as to whether or not the government should be responsible under the principles of attorney's fees.
That's correct. That's why we were able to raise this issue now. That is the question of whether it ought to be a judgment or a dismissal.
I don't know if that entitles you to raise an issue now, if it's been waived.
Well, it hasn't been waived, as I say, Your Honor. I think there are actually two points with respect to why there shouldn't be a judgment. Certainly the question of the merits of why the judgment was entered isn't waived, even under the suggestion that Judge Prost has made with respect to the final corrective action. Because in that circumstance, the case or controversy clearly didn't exist, and there was no reason to prolong jurisdiction in order to enter a judgment. All of the parties had been satisfied as to the statement of the corrective action. And moreover, what the court did in entering judgment, in its order entering judgment, is it essentially adopted the catalyst test. It stated that Chapman...
But it also said something more than that. I mean, looking at it, and it was not that long, but it says that the agency acquiesced to this plan only after the court granted the relief requested by Chapman and Greenleaf in a 16-page ruling on the merits. Is that accurate?
No, Your Honor. It is
What's
not.
What's inaccurate?
It's inaccurate because what the court did was enter a denial of a motion to dismiss. It was not a ruling on the merits. A ruling on the merits changes the legal relationship between the parties. That is for the purpose.
But they did enter a motion to dismiss, and you referred, when responding to Judge Newman, you referred to the Rice case.
Correct.
This is a little different than Rice, is it not?
It is a little different than Rice.
And in Rice, one of the factors that the court explicitly referred to was the fact that the Navy undertook the remedial action before any rulings by the Court of Federal Claims. Well, here, even if you disagree with what the judge said, there was a ruling here on the motion to dismiss it.
There was a ruling, but it wasn't the kind of ruling, Your Honor, that would that had the kind of judicial imprimatur that was sufficient to change the legal relationship between the parties. And I would submit that there are cases in other circuits that relate to this issue. There are cases that indicate that an order granting an entry of preliminary injunction, that is an order that actually forces the agency to stop doing something that it wanted to do, is not sufficient to constitute making the plaintiffs the prevailing parties for each of these purposes.
So what exists, if you were to prevail, and what are you seeking, that we get rid of this ruling and say the court should have entered, should have granted your motion to dismiss and not issued this ruling?
We're seeking the specific relief we're requesting is that the court remand the case for the entry of a dismissal. And there are two alternatives.
And what is the practical impact of that? If the case is dismissed, is the government still obligated to go forth with both Greenleaf and Chapman competing with a new solicitation?
Well, at this,
what's the status?
At this point, as Mr. Del Sordo mentioned, that reevaluation process has ended. In December,
there's no question that the government would comply with what the judge wanted to have happen.
In the sense that the government already has complied, Greenleaf was considered and rejected.
And so what's the status now?
The status now is that Greenleaf has filed a protest from GAO against... Yes, Your Honor. That protest is ongoing because Chapman was found to have the better offer. But turning back to the point with respect to the initial corrective action, the agency hadn't taken any steps with respect to this reevaluation prior to the events that gave rise to the protest. And at least it hadn't completed the reevaluation, it was in the midst of the reevaluation. Therefore, when it reinstituted the reevaluation, neither Chapman nor Greenleaf could state that it was prejudiced. And accordingly, it wasn't the court's place to step into the shoes of the agency and essentially supervise what the contracting officer would do going forward. Moreover, to the extent that there's any kind of an exception to the rule of mootness that's being argued by Greenleaf, that exception with respect to capable of evading judicial review doesn't apply. Because in this case, the only actions that HUD could have taken that would give rise to prejudice to either Chapman or Greenleaf with respect to reevaluation are actions that the parties would have received notice of, official agency actions. So accordingly, the court really should have dismissed upon the basis that the parties had been placed in the same positions they occupied prior to the events that gave rise to the protest.
But just to reiterate, there's no practical effect in what you're asking for other than whether or not there were arguably each of these.
I think that's right, Your Honor, at this point in the procurement, but that doesn't mean that the reasoning can't be used in order to enter a dismissal rather than a judgment. And I think that it's sufficient under a case...
I didn't mean to suggest that. I just want to be clear
yes.
on what the ramification, why we're here and what the government is arguing and the import of what you're asking for.
That is the import of what we're asking for, Your Honor. My time is down to yellow. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am here representing Greenleaf Construction Company, and to set the scorecard straight, Greenleaf joined the Department of Justice in opposing Chapman's appeal, and we oppose the Department of Justice in its cross-appeal. In other words, we support Judge Wheeler's decision in all respect as being a well-reasoned and well-supported decision.
But I thought you were not taking a position on the attorney's fees issue or on the motion to dismiss on the mootness issue.
We are. The only objection that the Department of Justice raised with regard to our opposition was a waiver argument. And that waiver argument, if you'd like me to address it right now, deals with they raised it on page 3 of their December 11th reply brief, saying that Greenleaf opposed its opportunity or right to oppose a cross appeal. That's strictly a procedural argument. At the time, this was after GAO ruled on Greenleaf's protest in Greenleaf's favor, and I assumed that HUD would follow Greenleaf or GAO's recommendation and allow Greenleaf to bid on the procurement. So did Judge Wheeler. We both thought that HUD people would allow Greenleaf to participate. It turned out we were both wrong. HUD decided to proceed with only Chapman and not with Greenleaf in the procurement.
That's on separate appeal, is that right?
Yes.
That's
being protested.
But what is your response to the government's position that on their theory that if this were a dismissal rather than a judgment, nobody gets attorney's fees?
Well, my position on that argument is that they're wrong. There is an existing case in controversy. One of the complaints that Greenleaf raised before Judge Wheeler was we wanted the award of the contract, and we also wanted HUD to follow a GAO recommendation. They did neither. They did an alternative thing. So when DOJ argues that they put the parties back where they were on April 19th, that's not accurate.
But is that what the judge did in his final ruling?
No. He assessed the reasonableness of HUD's corrective action. He took a very narrow view by assessing the reasonableness of HUD's corrective action.
But I think, on Judge Newman's point, I mean, the difference between the government's main deal here with each of these is the difference between what the judge did and what the alternative that the government is arguing for, which is granting a motion to dismiss, which makes the case move. That's the difference that will define whether or not they're each of these arguments.
Right.
What is your view? Do you have a position on that issue?
Our position is this was not appropriately a case for motion to dismiss. This was one which should have gone to the judgment because...
Well, look up in your brief on page 33, maybe I'm confusing it, but you have a whole heading that says Greenleaf does not object to the United States renewed motion to dismiss. Is that something different?
No, it's correct. At that point in time, we feel we're still going to be able to recover EJF fees if we want. We haven't decided whether we're going to even pursue them, actually. But what we're here arguing today with regard to the motion to dismiss is, this at that time, it was not an appropriate motion to dismiss because what the court reviewed was the alternative relief offered by HUD. There was still a case in controversy at the time Judge Wheeler ruled. And whether or not it's a motion for the judgment or motion to dismiss, we feel that it's not appropriate for a motion to dismiss. There was still jurisdiction, there was still a case in controversy, and Department of Justice has taken this position that all the parties have been placed in the same position they were before. They were not. HUD came up with an alternative form of relief. May it please the court, I'd like to first address what Mr. Chapman's appeal deals with. And that really concerns the applicability of the SBA's subsequent decision from OHA, Office of Hearings and Appeals, with regard to the size of Greenleaf. If you go back in time to July 8th of 2004, HUD originally awarded this contract to Greenleaf. A size appeal was then filed by Chapman 10 days later, and the area office ruled in favor of Chapman that Greenleaf was not small. Greenleaf, we then filed an appeal with SBA's Office of Hearings Appeal. That decision did not come out until February of 06. And that decision is what we're relying on to make the argument that the award decision to Chapman had not occurred, because you cannot have an award decision without a responsibility determination. And as we argued in our brief, and Judge Wheeler noted, award cannot be made without responsibility determination. And HUD admits that a responsibility determination had not been made, and in fact, GAO ordered that a responsibility determination be made. That was one of their recommendations. Also, OHA does not issue advisory opinions. They only issue opinions that apply with regard to a particular contract. And by virtue of the fact that they issued this opinion, it must apply to this procurement, because that would be a violation of their own statute. And finally, if Chapman's appeal were allowed to proceed, the consequence would be someone can file an unfounded or an unsuccessful size protest and garner the benefits of it. What we're trying to say is, look, if SBA comes in and ultimately finds that you are indeed a qualified small business, that's going to apply to this procurement, and they're bound by it. So for those reasons, there's the final thing that Judge Wheeler pointed out, is a preference for competition. For those reasons, we feel that we're entitled to stay within the procurement and participate. And indeed, as it turned out, factually, HUD did, after Judge Wheeler intervened, HUD did allow both parties to submit revised proposals. With regard to Department of Justice cross appeal, just a couple of brief points. As I mentioned earlier, Greenleaf's third prayer for relief was to have the contract awarded to it. That did not happen. And despite the language that the contracting officer issued, which was regard to allowing for a reassessment of reevaluation, we still had a case in controversy. In essence, what HUD did was to come up with an alternative form of relief. So the core question here is, what sort of role does the court have when an agency offers alternative relief? It's our position that what HUD was basically offered was a different form of relief than we requested. If Department of Justice's cross motion is granted, it means that an agency can merely say, I'm considering taking corrective action, and that would be sufficient for the agency to come in via Department of Justice and move to dismiss the case and divest the court of jurisdiction. It's the equivalent of a contractor coming in with a claim and the government, the agency saying, we agree with you on entitlement, but we're not going to tell the court what the quantum is, and then unilaterally dismiss the case. That's the equivalent of what Department of Justice is asking you to do today. And it's our position that that would result in a narrowing of the court's jurisdiction. Judge Wheeler correctly noted his decision that the court is entitled to narrowly review the scope of the corrective action to assess whether it's reasonable. It's a very narrow scope. In the cases he cites through the Mantec and the GSC contracting service decision, he mentioned those and he was mindful that he was not substituting his judgment for the judgment of the agency. Rather, he was just assessing the reasonableness of the action. And as he pointed out, he said, a mere proposal of corrective action without some explanation of the proposed plan is insufficient. And that's what he felt was important enough to give him the right to go in and ask the agency to explain, what do you mean, before I'm going to grant Department of Justice the right to dismiss the case for lack of jurisdiction. In conclusion, I believe that granting the Department of Justice's motion to dismiss would establish a dangerous precedent for contractors that will prevent protesters from obtaining any meaningful relief from the Court of Federal Claims. I believe that Judge Wheeler's decision strikes a fair and balanced approach by limiting the court's inquiry to a determination of the agency's proposed corrective action, and moreover, that limiting the role, as the Department of Justice suggests, would be tantamount to giving the agencies the ability to end-run protest processes at the Court of Federal Claims. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Braden. Mr. Del Sordo, you have some public time.
Thank you, Your Honor. To go back to the timeline of these proposed corrective actions, I think it's important to understand where Chapman's coming from and the problem with Judge Wheeler's actions. As government's counsel noted, after we filed the protest and then there was a series of depositions and development of the record, the government announced, we're going to take corrective action, dismiss this case. But they did not say what they were going to do. So my client and Greenleaf both filed oppositions to that motion of dismissing. Look, we can't go off into the dark not knowing what's going on. You need to explain what you're going to do. And that's what Mr. Britton was just discussing there. So then the government came back and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to reinstate this procurement. We're not going to cancel the procurement. We're not going to go out with a totally new solicitation. We're going to hold discussions with Chapman to have them address the concerns of the GAO from the January 2006 decision, and then we will decide, basically, we'll do what the GAO had recommended us to do. That was fine. We were good with that, because then that was my client stood alone and he was being evaluated by himself and appropriately upholding the concept that he was the only small business that was in existence at the time of contract award.
Which but now you've got some more.
Right. Well, we had it before also.
So you don't stand to, even if you were to prevail, you would be in the same position, with the exception that there's a protest pending. So in case that doesn't work out for you, you get it. But if somehow, so right now, we don't know whether it would make any difference whatsoever to you as to whether or not we would.
But that's entirely the point, Your Honor, because the Comptroller General has not issued a decision. If the Comptroller General says HUD's action was appropriate and my client was appropriately awarded the contract, we can go forward. That does not preclude the possibility of Greenleaf then going to the Court of Federal Claims and saying, essentially, we litigated that point. However, if the Comptroller General reverses HUD, or they go to the Court of Federal Claims and the Court of Federal Claims says, no, you can't do that, your decision becomes important, because if you rule that the agency's corrective action, that Judge Wheeler stepped in and said, no, you cannot do that, you cannot just have Chapman in the competitive range, to remove that determination would once again leave us as the only small business in the competitive range. So that is why it's important that Judge Wheeler's decision, his injection of himself into the process, needs to be overturned, because it was not appropriate at that point. He was substituting his judgment for the contracting officers. He took a look at the regulatory scheme, and he decided that one portion of the regulatory scheme, the secret requirements for competition, was more important than the clear dictates of FAR 19.302, which says very clearly that any decision by the SBA that comes after contract award is irrelevant to the procurement at hand. Okay? So that's why it's important to not have Judge Wheeler's stopping of what the contracting officer's fully explained corrective action needs to be overturned. That is the concern that we have here, that the government's corrective action, as explained, that they were going to open up discussions with Chapman only, as the only small business in the competitive range, that should not have been overturned by Judge Wheeler. And this becomes important because, as Mr. Britton said, and us as government's counsel said, that this becomes an issue of what the government can, what the contracting officer can do when it comes to resolving protests. And if you have any further questions, I have nothing further to say. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lacerda. Mr. Arriata, I have a little time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to point out that every single party has waived its challenge to our cross-appeal, and I want to explain why. None of the parties raised a justiciable objection to our cross-appeal because, as the Court's already noted, Chapman never raised any objection to our cross-appeal in its reply brief.
Now, is this rebuttal, or are you making some new points?
I'm rebutting two of the arguments that I heard Greenleaf make, and three arguments that I heard Greenleaf make.
Okay.
You can only rebut the cross-appeal.
Yes, that's right. And this relates to the cross-appeal in that it discusses whether there were any objections to it. MCB, which is the other party in this case, shouldn't even have standing because it isn't competing for the contract. Greenleaf, twice in this proceeding, has specifically argued that the agency's initial corrective action mooted all the parties' requests for relief. And I'm talking about the initial corrective action that didn't explain whether discussions would be held with Chapman or Greenleaf or anybody.
Do you understand what I asked Greenleaf's counsel about on page 33, where they referred to the United States review motion to dismiss filed on June 7, 2006? Is that the motion to dismiss that you want us to reinstate here in lieu of the court's ruling, or is that a different motion to dismiss?
That's the second motion to dismiss.
That's different.
That is different from the first motion to dismiss, which I'm discussing right now. With respect to the initial motion to dismiss, the initial corrective action, Chapman stated at Supplemental Appendix pages 27 and 28 that all of its requests for relief were mooted at that point and it had no objection to our motion to dismiss. Second, at page 33 of the brief, as Your Honor has just mentioned, if Greenleaf has no objection to dismissal, then it's unclear how it has any ability to challenge a cross-appeal that's requesting dismissal. Greenleaf essentially is saying that the initial corrective action was somehow insufficient because it didn't say what the agency would do next. But the judge, by requesting what the agency would do next and refusing to rule on a motion to dismiss, despite the fact that no case or controversy existed at that point, is extended its jurisdiction to essentially supervise the contracting officer. And that was what was improper here. Finally, with respect to the notion that Greenleaf states that there was still a remaining case or controversy at the time that the initial corrective action was taken, the only thing that Greenleaf has stated with respect to that is it's pointing to its request for relief that it be awarded the contract. That was obviously not cognizable, and in any event, premature, absent the reevaluation going forward. In its briefs, it provided some other reasons. For the reasons that we stated in our briefs, those have nothing to do with Greenleaf's request for relief. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you all. Case is taken into submission.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.